HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to On the Record. Pakistan has a new Prime Minister. 70-year-old Shehbaz Sharif was appointed after a drawn-out vote of no confidence and much drama, with the opposition coming together to oust Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf leader and former cricketer Imran Khan. Khan came to office in 2018 with much promise of clean politics, but it's all ended rather badly, with him alleging that his losing the vote of no confidence was an international conspiracy. Sharif is the younger brother of former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif and used to be Chief Minister of the Punjab province. So what does having a new regime in the neighborhood mean for India? To talk about that, we have former High Commissioner and author of the excellent book on Pakistan, People Next Door, TCA Raghavan. Mr. Raghavan, thank you so much for speaking with Hindustan Times. I want to start off by asking you, what can you tell us about Shehbaz Sharif?
Well, thank you for inviting me. Well, as you mentioned, Shehbaz Sharif is Nawaz Sharif's brother. He belongs to a very prominent family, political family of Punjab. Shehbaz Sharif's and Nawaz Sharif's father was a well-known figure of Punjab for many years. Nawaz Sharif has been Prime Minister thrice. And Shehbaz Sharif is a familiar name in Punjab politics and has been a central figure in that province's politics since the 1990s. He is otherwise well-known for delivering well as an administrator. I think his general reputation has been that, notwithstanding all the talk and all the drawbacks about his family's business connections and their own business dealings and a certain amount of skullduggery associated with that, nevertheless, the overall perception of him has been that he's a very good administrator, and in particular, he's excellent at implementing big infrastructure projects. To some extent, this was also Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif's reputation, because one great project which was implemented in the 1990s was the Lahore-Islamabad highway, which remains to this day a significant infrastructural upgradation of Pakistan and also of South Asia. So I would say Shehbaz Sharif stands out as a good administrator. Whether he will be able to bring those qualities to bear in his current tenure as Prime Minister of Pakistan, that remains to be seen.
And Mr. Raghavan, what would you say about the kind of trend in politics? Imran Khan, as I mentioned, at that time, you know, he talked all about clean politics, and he obviously seemed to have a lot of popularity. Even now, we're seeing protests in various parts of Pakistan. Would you say that right now Shehbaz Sharif kind of embodies a return to legacy politics with the usual suspects, in the sense that he also faces some old charges of corruption and money laundering? So if you look at the movement, because your book talks about the highs and lows of India-Pakistan and the kind of how Pakistan politics has been evolving. So if you look at it in that perspective, what point, where would you place Shehbaz Sharif's appointment?
Well, there is a certain section of people in Pakistan, and particularly in the younger generations, who are tired of the old style of politics. They're tired of these major, almost feudal, but they're no longer feudal. They're really industrial come landed families, these magnates running vast provinces almost like their pocket boroughs. So there is a certain element of exhaustion, and Imran Khan fed into that, quite apart from the other factors which propelled him or catapulted him to the top job. There was this sense that you need something new in Pakistan. It is a country which has a very large young population. They have huge problems. In many ways, They have all the problems of South Asia put together. So there is that sense of exhaustion. But at the same time, the last 3 years saw also a disenchantment with this new style of politics, which was promising the moon to everybody. You know, having the position that good intentions or stated good intentions can solve all problems. I think there is a sense of disenchantment that this promised new style of politics did not deliver. And this is quite apart from numerous other tactical errors and acts of omission and commission of Prime Minister Imran Khan. So I think the jury is out. We have to see what comes out at the top after a few months, whether this disenchantment will the older style of politics come to the top, or whether there will be a sense that you don't need mavericks, but you need a steady hand with all its faults. You need someone steadier who understands the intricacies of governance and administration.
If I can come now for a bit to the opening remarks that we've seen Shehbaz Sharif make about India in his speech, where he devoted considerable attention to India. What's your reaction to the fact that when he talked about India, he fell back on resolving the Kashmir issue? What do you make of that?
You see, we have to accept that for any political figure in Pakistan, the Kashmir issue is at the center of their radar. Not center of the radar in substantive or real terms, but center of the radar in metaphorical terms. And certainly no one can, we can't expect anyone to say that, you know, we'll put Kashmir on the back burner and get on with the rest of our lives. They may well work with you to devise a package where you can move on other things and then see what can be done about highly contentious issues like Kashmir, but no one is ever going to say it up front. And I think that is one of the central issues in India-Pakistan relations. How do you move this immovable object so that your relations can otherwise not be stopped from acquiring some much-needed stability? I think in India, we tend to overlook how central Kashmir is part not just of their political discourse, but of their mental landscapes. You know, in many ways, the fact that K in Pakistan stands for Kashmir is itself revealing of the mindsets which prevail and which exist.
And do you think, is it also relevant to the fact that his family is said to have moved from the Kashmir area? Is that of particular significance vis-a-vis his reference?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we should look for reasons in Shehbaz Sharif's family background or his own personality or his own intellectual inclinations to see what he's saying. This is their nationally stated position, and there is a consensus on it across the entire political spectrum. Much like there is a consensus in India in the most fundamental sense across the entire political spectrum that Jammu and Kashmir is an integral part of India. It doesn't mean that there are no nuances in this position, that you can't work with this position. But in the end, the challenge before India-Pakistan diplomacy is how do you resolve this? How do you deal with this issue to which there is no straightforward or obvious solution?
So in that, having heard that part from you, what do you make of the fact that people are actually, you know, they felt that this kind of exchange of tweets that happened between our Prime Minister Narendra Modi and Shehbaz Sharif, that they felt that, oh, you know, there might be a warming up between the two, because we've seen the relationship between the two countries nosedive, whether it's after Pulwama, especially after the scrapping of Article 370 in Jammu and Kashmir. Do you think people are making too much of the fact that they exchanged tweets?
Well, I don't underrate its significance, but don't wish to amplify it too much. It is good if India and Pakistan engage, no matter on what platform, even if it is to engage to disagree. So while in substance we can say opposite things, as long as we are engaging directly with each other and not at each other, it is a healthy sign. And while you are quite right, the last 5 or 6 years has been a virtual desert in the relationship. But in the last year or so, there have been some positives. The ceasefire has been very effective. That's a good development. Yes. A large consignment of wheat went through Pakistan to Afghanistan for the first time ever. Again, a significant development. There was a serious issue like the missile error, which was handled well on both sides. And certainly Pakistan showed good handling. So these are, you know, otherwise bleak landscape, good takeaways. And given the background of Prime Minister Modi's earlier engagements with Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, I think it's not a bad development.
I just wanted you to expand a little bit on that last point that you made, the misfire. I found it extraordinary that, you know, this entire thing had happened, that we had misfired the BrahMos missile. And it felt like it was a huge, you know, there could have been major repercussions. But were you surprised at the way Pakistan was very, very measured in its response?
Well, yes and no. Because I don't think anyone in India or anyone in Pakistan or most people in India and Pakistan want relations to get out of hand in terms of how seriously they can get out of hand. So to that extent, I was not surprised that probably saner assessments prevailed, because both in India and Pakistan, we have a living example in front of us of how badly things can go between neighboring countries, which are otherwise intimately connected. And you have to look at what is happening in Europe between Russia and Ukraine. And I think both in India and Pakistan, notwithstanding a deeply adversarial relationship, most people would say that that is one track we do not want to go down. So in that background, that India and Pakistan managed to contain otherwise bad situations is a good development. It has happened before, and it's a very good development that it happened again.
Mr. Raghavan, I want to ask you a little bit about how you see the role of the army and Shehbaz Sharif's relationship with the army. As the popular assumption and perception, I should say, of Pakistani politics is for outsiders like me, it's that if you have to survive, you have to have a great relationship with the army. We didn't see Nawaz Sharif, his brother. In fact, you know, he was in the 90s, he was ousted by a coup, a military coup. Would you say, and it's many are saying that Shehbaz Sharif has a better equation. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Well, it is true that the army is a principal political actor. It is not a political animal, but it nevertheless has an enormous background influence. And often it is much more than a background player. And certainly every Prime Minister of Pakistan has to keep that in mind. But the interesting contradiction in Pakistani politics is that it is almost a structural feature that no matter how much indebted a politician who becomes prime minister, anyone who becomes prime minister, may be to the army, inevitably over time, contradictions between the two mature and then come to a head. So this happened with Nawaz Sharif. You're quite right. He was ousted in a coup, but he began very much as a favored candidate of the army who was specially chosen or specially selected to run Pakistan's politics. But within a few years and in a very short period of time, contradictions between the prime minister and the army chief came to the fore. And it had happened earlier too, even with a non-figure like Muin Qureshi and, no, not Muin Qureshi, I forget the name, but he was Prime Minister with Ziaul Haq. He was chosen by Ziaul Haq and in effect was seen as the army's creature, but in the end had to be dumped by the army. And you've seen this over and over again, and more recently with Imran Khan, who was, again, the favored choice of the army to deal with politicians they did not see eye to eye with, like those from the People's Party and the Pakistan Muslim League. And now, in the end, differences develop between him and the army too. So it's a structural feature. And my takeaway from that is that while the Pakistan Army is a very important political force, it is by no means the only political force in Pakistan. The Pakistan Army also probably realizes and has to acknowledge the fact that Pakistan is too complicated for it to run like a cantonment. It needs other institutions to run the country. And therefore, you have a situation which becomes a kind of a de facto sharing of influence and sharing of power. But as in all power sharing arrangements, it's not an easy process. And such alliances are fundamentally unstable. So this contradiction between the political class and the military is going to remain a recurrent feature of Pakistan's politics.
And would you attribute that to the fact that I find it fascinating that even after so many years that no prime minister has completed a full term? Is that factor responsible?
That is certainly one of the factors which is responsible. Because Pakistan has considerable heterogeneity. So it would be rare to find a political party with such an overwhelming majority in parliament that no factions will develop within the ruling party. So to that extent, every political party which comes to power has a certain vulnerability. And even when such a vulnerability is at its minimum, contradictions and tensions and frictions always develop between it and the military. And the military, as I said, has considerable influence in all political parties. And therefore, ignoring its requirements or ignoring its interests inevitably leads to problems between it and whoever is in charge of running the country.
My final question, having served in Pakistan, having so much knowledge about the region, what would you advocate? What kind of foreign policy towards Pakistan would you like to see from India?
Well, I think it's difficult to answer because for 70 years, the best minds in both countries have grappled with that question and not come up with really robust answers. I think, to my mind, the starting point has to be that we acknowledge that relations between neighboring countries can often be or frequently are very rocky. It's not as if we are ever going to have a relationship with Pakistan which is friction-free, turbulence-free, or which is not periodically going to see crises erupt. Things are too complicated in South Asia to imagine that kind of a golden age ever dawning. I think we will always have very difficult relations with Pakistan. But the challenge before diplomats and before for the foreign policy of both countries is how do you try and impart greater stability to what will always be a relationship which is trouble-prone or accident-prone. And that means you have to disaggregate it and look not so much at big bang approaches or big bang processes or big bang solutions, but disaggregate it and see what you can do by looking at certain elements which can impart more stability. So in the past, we have looked at issues such as trade. Possibly there is more scope for doing something on that. There is also scope for trying to increase cooperation and areas such as public health, climate change. But the relationship will always be plagued by crises, because if you look at what is happening in our entire region with what is happening in Afghanistan, just like Germany or Europe could not insulate themselves from what was happening in Syria, we cannot seriously expect Pakistan to insulate itself from what is happening in Afghanistan. And inevitably, that has an impact on India. So issues of extremism, terrorism, all these will remain major challenges to the relationship. I think what is required is to have some kind of process in place so that you have stabilization measures to prevent things from getting too much out of hand, while at the same time recognizing that given the nature of the relationship, there will be occasions when relations will plummet. If there is a major terrorist attack tomorrow, we cannot insulate what will happen in India-Pakistan relations from public sentiment in India or the kind of outrage which will exist on the streets. I think those are all challenges which exist in neighboring country relationships.
TC Raghavan, thank you so much for giving us so much insight. And to everyone listening, they should really, I really recommend your book. I loved it. It gave me so much insight. So thank you so much for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this edition of On the Record, don't forget to write to us. You can contact me on Twitter at Sunetra C and on Instagram, Ms. Sunetra, to tell me what you thought of this interview and if you'd like me to interview a particular person. That's it for now. Do like and subscribe and share this podcast. I'll be back again with another edition. Till then, goodbye.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast. HD Smartcast.